The Everything Parents Guide to Positive Discipline has become a cornerstone resource for parents navigating the complex terrain of child rearing. Featured in Oprah's book club and consistently recommended by child psychologists, this guide offers a refreshing perspective that challenges traditional punitive approaches. As actress and mother Reese Witherspoon once noted, "Understanding positive discipline completely transformed my relationship with my children." The book's enduring popularity stems from its fundamental premise: effective parenting requires both love and training. Neither alone is sufficient. Parenting is a transformative journey of helping dependent infants grow into independent young adults through both nurturing love and consistent training. When these elements fall out of balance, problems arise. Training without love becomes oppressive and controlling, while love without training creates overindulgent, entitled children. Either extreme produces spoiled children who struggle with healthy relationships later in life. Discipline forms the crucial training component, helping children learn right beliefs and behaviors through example and direction. What constitutes right varies between families based on traditions and values, but the approach to teaching these values makes all the difference. The most effective discipline equation is 90% positive instruction and only 10% correction. When this ratio is reversed, behavior typically worsens as excessive negative responses from parents encourage more negative responses from hurt and angry children. Animal trainers have long understood this principle, focusing on positive reinforcement rather than punishment. They recognize that effective training relationships must hold positive value for the animal being trained. Similarly, athletic coaches keep champions focused primarily on what they're doing right, not wrong. The same principle applies to disciplining children. Positive attention to what's going well encourages continuation of good behavior. Children are naturally pleasure-seeking and pain-avoiding, so they tend to repeat rewarded behaviors and avoid punished ones. While rewards and punishments may seem equally influential initially, their long-term effects differ significantly. The more punitive a relationship becomes, the less a child desires to cooperate. Conversely, rewarding relationships increase cooperation because the child enjoys pleasing the parent. Parents' disciplinary approach often shifts from primarily positive during early childhood to increasingly negative as children age. This shift, ironically intended to increase parental influence, actually diminishes it by damaging the relationship. To prevent this self-defeating transformation, follow the 2-for-1 rule. For every negative disciplinary response, make 2 positive responses within the next half hour, showing your child you see more positive than negative value in them. Effective instruction requires understanding how children learn. As parents, your actions speak louder than words. Modeling the behavior you want to see is crucial. Even with your own shortcomings, you can use honest acknowledgement of your mistakes as teaching moments. Remember that children are multiple trial learners who need repetition and patience. Consider your child's preferred learning style, visual, auditory, or kinesthetic, and be sensitive to the risks involved in learning. Admitting ignorance, making mistakes, feeling stupid, looking foolish, and being evaluated. Support learning by giving permission for not knowing, treating mistakes as instructional opportunities, acknowledging feelings of inadequacy, admiring the courage to try, and providing positive feedback on progress. When addressing misbehavior, determine whether an instructional or corrective response is appropriate. If your child didn't understand the rule or didn't know better, provide instruction by explaining your position. If your child understood but chose to misbehave anyway, a corrective response may be warranted. However, always follow correction with instruction so the child knows how to act differently next time. Only correct children old enough to understand what constitutes misbehavior, typically over age 3. For younger children, use patient, persistent, positive instruction through playful demonstration and imitation games. The formula for disciplinary training in early childhood is play plus patience, practice plus positive attention equals productive instruction. When correction is needed for unsafe behavior in young children, use a gentle but clear no with appropriate body language, followed by normalizing the relationship with a smile and hug. Correction should be reserved for deliberate misbehavior and given carefully to avoid threatening a child's security or self-esteem. The goal is positive behavior change with minimal negative impact. Always maintain a rational rather than emotional approach and balance correction with positive responses. Disciplining children requires patience for instruction and firmness for correction, both challenging aspects of parenting. Though it may seem easier to do things for your child than teach them, disciplinary instruction is an investment in their future self-sufficiency. Every wrongdoing becomes an opportunity to teach what's right, despite the challenges this presents. Parents must guard against negative reactions when discipline problems persist. Fatigue, frustration, or anger can lead to harmful perspectives, seeing the child negatively, making unfair generalizations, narrowing perception to only see wrongdoing, taking misbehavior personally, or feeling helpless. If your view becomes overly negative, seek support to restore perspective by identifying what's going right in your child's life and the qualities you value. Children are adults in training, and current behaviors often predict future ones. To shape your child's future, you must actively discipline now, addressing problematic behaviors before they become entrenched habits. Be intentional about fostering good habits related to character, integrity, health, communication, and responsibility through specific activities and personal modeling. Discipline is parenting's hardest aspect, requiring significant energy with often limited immediate rewards. You risk your child's resentment, expressed through complaints like, "You never let me do anything," or "Why can't you just leave me alone?" Children rarely thank parents for discipline. Parents who crave popularity with their children often struggle with discipline. They may feel insecure when displeasing their child, guilty about causing unhappiness, or conflict avoidant. Remember that discipline with the child's welfare in mind is an act of love. Explain to your child, "I care enough to instruct and correct you even when it makes you angry. It's hard to face your disapproval, but I love you enough to take a stand for your best interests. Discipline isn't something I do to you, it's something I do for you, not to hurt you, but to help you, both now and for your future." Some parents believe in an input-output theory of parental influence. Good parenting automatically produces good children. This theory is only partly true, as many factors beyond parental control shape a child's development, including culture, genetic traits, the child's own choices, outside circumstances, peer influences, and chance events. While parenting matters greatly, it's just one of many influences on a child's development. Parents need realistic humility about their power, recognizing they cannot fully protect or prepare their children for everything. The parent equals child equation dangerously ties parental adequacy to child performance, when in reality, good parents can have children who sometimes make bad choices during normal development. Taking total blame for your child's failures or struggles gives too much credit to parental influence and can lead to inappropriate guilt. Children may manipulate guilty parents to escape personal responsibility. Parents need realistic humility, acknowledging they cannot be all-knowing, all-powerful, or perfect. They can inform choices, but cannot control them. Parents who lament, "We can't control our child," treat lack of control as a problem when it's simply reality. They never did and never will control their child. Parents control only their own conduct, which can influence but not determine a child's decisions. To influence your child's behavior, examine and adjust your own, as your actions affect your child both now and later. Recurring conflicts signal you're stuck in a self-defeating pattern that requires interruption. When emotions take over thinking for both parent and child, declare a timeout to cool down and restore reason. Examine your own behavior first, then ask your child why the problem persists. treat recurring issues as mutual concerns and enlist your child's ideas for solutions. Two heads are often better than one. Since parents can't control children's decisions, effective discipline requires gaining their consent, their willingness to follow instruction and accept correction. Recognizing and respecting consent builds a foundation for effective discipline. Parents must work for consent and consistently reward it with appreciation, rather than only noticing when consent is withheld. Parents must actively work for their child's consent, rewarding compliance with sincere appreciation and praise, even when it takes multiple reminders. Most parents only notice consent when they don't get it, missing valuable opportunities to reinforce cooperative behavior. Since positive responses have more shaping power than negative ones, expressing appreciation for consent encourages its continuation. Even the most rebellious child gives some consent. When parents fail to recognize this, children feel unappreciated and unfairly evaluated, while parents grow frustrated and fearful. Always crediting the consent your child gives maintains a healthy perspective during times of refusal and encourages continued cooperation. Parents often become fixated on specific behavioral problems, losing sight of everything going right. When you focus exclusively on what's going wrong, you risk viewing your child as completely out of control when they're actually giving consent in numerous other areas. Maintaining this broader perspective keeps passing problems in proportion and prevents discouraging your child with an overly negative view. Between ages 3 and 4, children should learn four basic cooperation skills through repetition: listening and attending, tell me what I just said, giving to get, what you do for me connects to what I do for you, keeping agreements, I mean what I say, and being of service, I have skills worth offering. These habits build cooperation that will benefit your relationship now and in the future. Courtesy, using small acts of consideration to signify special caring, is crucial to effective discipline, yet often underappreciated when present and painfully noticeable when absent. It communicates respect and acknowledges the child's cooperation isn't taken for granted. Being asked feels better than being told because it shows respect rather than command. Small, courteous acts convey larger relationship values. Praise signifies admiration, compliments show approval, thanks express appreciation, hugs demonstrate affection, listening indicates attention, and inclusion communicates acceptance. These small gestures mean a great deal, and their absence can wound through perceived insensitivity. When stressed or preoccupied with problems, parents may commit acts of discourtesy with enormously damaging effects. Instead of praise, they give contempt. Instead of compliments, criticism. Instead of thanks, taking cooperation for granted. Instead of hugs, withholding loving touch. Instead of listening, ignoring. And instead of including, excluding the child. These acts can significantly damage a child's self-esteem. The quality of family life depends more on continuous observation of minor courtesies than on handling occasional major crises. How you treat your child teaches that child how to treat you in return. Sincere apologies are crucial when either parent or child wrongs the other, developing conscience and self-correction. Parents who refuse to admit wrongdoing encourage children to follow that example. Parents must model sincere apologizing. I'm sorry for what I said. It was wrong. My anger is no excuse. I won't say that again, and I'm willing to hear about any hurt feelings my angry words caused. Forgiveness allows the injured party to let go of hurt rather than nurture grievance and resentment, while allowing the injuring party to release guilt. Even when children show no remorse, parents should try creating empathetic connections. How would you feel if I borrowed your computer without asking? Diversity among family members makes discipline complex but necessary. Parents must recognize that no two children are alike, nor are parents identical in their approaches. This natural human diversity requires flexibility in disciplinary strategies while maintaining consistent family values. Children respond differently to discipline. Some readily consent, while others resist. Some argue, while others remain silent. Some demand explanations, while others accept rules without question. Your first job as a parent is understanding each child's unique temperament, sensitivities, aptitudes, and personality. Early parenting requires learning your child's human nature to make them feel understood, accepting their nature to make them feel welcomed, lovingly connecting with them to build secure bonds, and learning to dance with their nature so you can lead their growth while they follow your guidance. Your children will have different personalities, not just from each other, but from you. When a child's temperament differs significantly from yours, perhaps you're calm, focused, and introverted, while they're excitable, distracted, and impulsive, resist the urge to change their nature to match yours. Attempting to alter inborn traits can feel like rejection to your child, potentially damaging their self-esteem with the message, "There must be something wrong with me." Instead of struggling to change their personality, learn to work with it. All marriages are cross-cultural to some degree, with each partner bringing different family backgrounds and childhood experiences. When you become parents, you must remarry to determine how you'll function as a family, discovering different parenting ideas that hadn't surfaced before. These differences aren't problems, but sources of richness and strength. When conflicts over disciplinary values arise, respect your partner's values, specify each person's wants, and negotiate compromises without criticizing the underlying value differences. Families with two children often fall into a trap where one becomes labeled the good child, naturally compliant, similar to parents, while the other becomes the bad child, more stubborn, independent. Though parents may never use these terms explicitly, children adopt these roles and develop an envious relationship. Every child needs permission to be both good and bad, to be human. Liberate the good child by assuring them mistakes won't diminish your love, and remind the bad child that you see and value their positive qualities beyond any trouble they cause. Authority forms the foundation of effective discipline. Children must respect parental authority to consent to guidance, either through love-based respect or fear-based compliance. Fear-based authority damages relationships, teaching children to use distance, distrust, and deception as protective strategies. Parents must assume authority confidently rather than asking permission for it, conveying the firm attitude, "I mean what I say and will help you behave responsibly." Parents must assume authority without seeking permission for it. Children need to give consent for authority to take hold, but parents must act entitled to this authority and expect respect. Effective authority relies less on consequences and more on a confident attitude that communicates firm boundaries for the child's safety and well-being. Parents avoid assuming authority for various reasons: reacting against their own strict upbringing, fearing inequality will damage friendship with their child, craving approval, lacking confidence, or having no effective parental model to follow. Without proper authority, children gather unhealthy power to control themselves and the family, parents lose effectiveness and self-respect, and children develop self-centeredness that creates problems accepting limits in relationships and following social rules. Parents uncomfortable with authority can practice simple behaviors that establish their position: requesting information, confronting issues, making demands, setting limits, holding children to promises, insisting on task completion, applying consequences, offering advice, controlling support, making judgments about behavior, and creating conditions for freedom. Authority isn't just corrective, but also contributive, providing resources, permissions, encouragement, help, support, advocacy, protection, knowledge, instruction, coaching, and praise. The more correction required, the more positive authority should be demonstrated to balance the relationship. Parental authority style, approachable versus absolute, significantly impacts parent-child relationships. Approachable authority allows discussion of rules, explains reasoning, listens to arguments, and answers questions while maintaining final say. Absolute authority views questions as talking back, complaints as criticism, and disagreement as disrespect. Approachable authority generally works better with adolescents, offering the compromise. The child gets to speak while parents get their way. Family rules provide essential training at home and preparation for following social rules in the wider world. They create structure for decision-making about appropriate behaviors, though their effectiveness depends on how they're applied. Rules stem from parental worry about safety, but they also provide children with security through predictable boundaries and expectations. Children without adequate rule-following experience at home often struggle in school settings. Those from chaotic or permissive families may not understand classroom procedures, while highly indulged children resist doing what they dislike. Only children accustomed to equal standing with adults may resist school authority. While children typically resent rules for limiting freedom, these same rules provide essential structure. Though rules impose limits that children often protest, "You're too strict," they simultaneously create predictable structure that provides security. Rules relieve children of certain decision-making burdens. "I can't because my parents won't let me" can be both complaint and relief. Parents who lack structure or consistency may overwhelm children with too many choices too early. High-energy children particularly need the stability of clear rules to feel secure and manage their behavior. Parents create two types of family rules: abiding rules and situational rules. Abiding rules apply to everyone without exception and reflect core family values. In this family, we do not steal, hit each other, or use hurtful names. Situational rules address management matters and may apply differently to different family members. Everyone has weekend chores, children do homework before play, and Sundays we visit grandparents. While abiding rules apply always, situational rules allow for occasional exceptions. Abiding rules require consistent enforcement to uphold family values, such as prohibiting curse words. Situational rules need general consistency, but allow for intentional flexibility when circumstances warrant. Without this flexibility, parents risk rigid enforcement that creates unnecessary problems. "I said 8 p.m. is bedtime, so you'll have to go to school with unfinished homework." Accidental inconsistency undermines rules when parents are too tired, busy, or forgetful to enforce them. This signals to children that parents don't truly care about the rule, encouraging children to ignore it too. In contrast, intentional inconsistency, deliberately making exceptions for special circumstances, actually strengthens situational rules by highlighting that exceptions prove the rule. If you had to choose just one goal of discipline, raising responsible children would be ideal. Children need both responsible behavior and responsibility to develop independence and grow in healthy ways. Responsible behavior and responsibility are distinct attributes. Responsible behavior means governing conduct according to ethical standards. Being thrifty means not wasting what I use. Responsibility is owning the consequences of one's decisions. "I got a speeding ticket because I wasn't watching my speed." Parents teach responsible behavior by limiting freedom and prescribing choice, while they teach responsibility by giving freedom and permitting choice. A well-behaved child isn't necessarily responsible if they've never had freedom to make independent choices. Conversely, a child with freedom but no instruction about responsible behavior lacks important ethical guidance. Both elements are essential. Responsible behavior implants values to distinguish right from wrong, while responsibility provides the mechanism for learning from experience. Every family defines responsible behavior differently based on their values, but all teach it through example and instruction. With pre-verbal children, parents demonstrate desired behaviors through imitation games and gentle correction. For older children, parents can organize instruction around the concept of care. Caring for self, health, hygiene, possessions, caring for family others, consideration, sharing, caring for the family unit, contributing to chores, and caring for outside others, respecting rights, volunteering. Teaching responsibility challenges parents because it requires giving children freedom to make choices and face consequences. The timing is crucial. Letting go too early risks immature judgment and potential harm, while letting go too late leaves children unprepared for independent decision-making. Teaching responsibility responsibly involves several steps: showing the child how to do something through explanation and demonstration, helping with advice and support, monitoring with supervision, allowing practice within suitable limits, and finally, letting go for independent practice. Teaching responsibility means helping children develop the habit of thinking twice, moving beyond the one-step thinking of infancy, knowing what one wants and seeking immediate gratification, to two-step thinking that adds judgment as the crucial second step. Parents train children to delay impulsive gratification long enough to consider consequences. What happened before when you made this choice? What might happen if you make this choice? Children must learn that life is a chain of choice and consequence, that their decisions influence outcomes. Parents help establish this connection by allowing children to experience the natural results of their choices rather than constantly protecting them from consequences. When a child spends money impulsively, then needs more later, parents should refuse emergency financing to help them understand how present choices affect future options. Effective discipline rests on four fundamental factors: guidance, supervision, punishment, and exchange points. Each serves a distinct purpose in helping children develop into responsible adults. Guidance, the first factor, involves one-sided communication, where parents provide information to help children navigate growing up. Despite many competing influences, parents remain the most important source of guidance because they care most deeply and have their child's best interests at heart. The principle is simple. If there's something your child could benefit from knowing, major or minor, welcome or unwelcome, tell them out of concern, not criticism. Effective parents maintain constant communication with their children, understanding that children need parental wisdom to navigate life's complexities. Children value parental guidance as a trusted compass for direction, using it either to follow or rebel against. Without this guidance, children turn to less reliable sources like peers or popular culture. Supervision, the second factor, combines keeping after the child, pursuit, and keeping track of the child, surveillance. Though children dislike being nagged and monitored, these practices demonstrate parental care and commitment. Without adequate supervision, children may feel abandoned or unimportant. For non-negotiable responsibilities like homework and chores, supervision is more effective than punishment. Punishment implies choice. If you don't do homework, you'll be punished. While supervision removes the option of refusal, you have no choice about not doing homework. Parents should persist until the task is complete rather than offering consequences for non-compliance. Punishment, the third factor, can discourage repetition of wrongdoing when applied appropriately. Rather than physical punishment like spanking, which teaches hitting, parents should use isolation, deprivation, and reparation as negative consequences. The goal is to make children reconsider their actions, not to cause fear or emotional harm. Punishment should be reserved for significant rule violations and applied rationally rather than emotionally. Exchange points, the fourth factor, have the most training value by teaching children the connection between getting what they want and giving parents what they want. Children often feel entitled to parental support, creating one-way relationships where they do most of the getting. Exchange points establish mutuality by requiring children to give something in return for parental assistance, teaching them that healthy relationships involve two-way giving. As children develop greater capacity for language, understanding, judgment, responsibility, and independence, disciplinary approaches must evolve. Different techniques work best at different developmental stages, requiring parents to adjust their methods throughout childhood and adolescence. Young children need secure attachment and trust in parental love. They learn primarily through imitation rather than verbal explanation, naturally copying parental actions. Parents should instruct through modeling, play, and repetitive games, helping children acquire basic disciplinary skills like picking up toys or proper eating. Once children develop speech comprehension, parents can provide instructional discipline through verbal explanation. This period focuses on teaching cooperation, listening, giving to get, keeping agreements, family service, and responsibility, connecting choices with consequences. Around age 9, children begin seeking more personal and social freedom. Parents should establish a freedom contract, specifying conditions that must be met before granting greater independence. The 6 essential conditions are believability, predictability, responsibility, mutuality, availability, and civility, communicating respectfully even during disagreements. Adolescence brings more frequent and serious discipline challenges as teens become forgetful about obligations, argumentative, limit testing, and sometimes deceptive. Parents should employ 4 key strategies: guidance through continual feedback about what's working and not working, close supervision through checking and insistence, structure through enforceable rules backed by consequences, and exchange points, where parents withhold resources or permissions until the teenager cooperates. During late adolescence, 15 to 18, parents must prepare teenagers for independence by teaching essential life skills. This preparation involves listing exit responsibilities like job hunting, budgeting, car maintenance, and tax filing, then systematically teaching these skills during high school. Parents should gradually transfer responsibilities to teenagers, having them do their own laundry, make appointments, earn money, and manage expenses. During trial independence, 18 to 23, young adults living away from home face their most challenging stage of adolescence. Parents must shift from correctional to purely instructional discipline, abandoning the managing parent role for that of a mentoring parent. As mentors, parents don't express disappointment, criticism, or anger, but instead offer wisdom, empathy, and encouragement when their young adult seeks advice. Even when children are fully grown, parents retain influence as examples of how to cope with life's challenges. By demonstrating integrity during adversity and standing up for personal beliefs, parents model positive values. Throughout their children's adult lives, parents can serve as an appreciative audience and support system. What children wanted when young, "Watch what I can do," "Listen to what I did," "Tell me what you think," they continue to want as adults to shine in their parents' eyes.